Jim Buckley Jr. joins us on Sports Byline USA. I like good sports books, and if you're a baseball fan, you're going to enjoy this one. It's called Perfect, the inside story of baseball's 20 perfect games. And Jim, I suppose when we talk about sports, perfection is something that a lot of people aim for, but they rarely get. But in this particular case, you can statistically point to something perfect in baseball, can you not?
That's right. Yeah, thanks for having me on today, Ron. You're right. Only in baseball can a player be absolutely perfect. If a guy goes 20 for 20 in a basketball game, they don't say he had a perfect game because who knows, he had three turnovers. A football quarterback can complete all his passes but throw a pick or lose the game or something, doesn't get to be perfect. Only in baseball is there a statistical record that shows perfection. And as I always like to point out, it's not just the pitcher. The team has to be perfect too.
When you take a look at a perfect game in baseball, what beyond the obvious makes it so special?
Well, I think, first of all, the rarity is really the thing that comes to mind so quickly. There have been a couple hundred thousand baseball games played. 20 of them have had this amazing thing accomplished by the pitcher and his team behind him. So the rarity right off the bat is one that immediately comes to mind. The building pressure over the course of the game is another thing, because especially in the last 20 or 30 years, maybe not so much in the early days of baseball, but in the last 20 or 30 years, as more and more attention has been paid to games, as more and more fans can tune into games as they're going on, as word of a great accomplishment, you know, underway can be spread around the world via the internet and Twitter and all that stuff, the ongoing, that little three-hour drama, that little two- or three-hour drama of baseball, every single pitch can change history. One more out gets closer, one more batter, one more inning, and that building sense of anticipation that everybody knows what's going on is something that's also pretty rare, because, again, it doesn't, you don't see that in other sports, and you rarely see that in any other baseball games, because, sure, you're building toward a victory, but so much can happen that goes back and forth. A couple of hits don't change the outcome of a victory or a win sometimes, but literally one bad hop single, one error, one drop fly ball, one walk, one hit by pitch, and all of a sudden, poof, just like that, it's over.
You know, as a longtime of sports observer, Jim, one other thing jumped out at me about the perfect game, and that is the unpredictability. And what I mean by that, you cannot predict when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, or who is going to be the one to throw this perfect game. And I think that that is what makes it unique, because if you think also about, say, a player who hits 300, you could pretty much say, hey, this is a good hitter, and so he probably is going to hit 300, or somebody who hits 40 or 50 home runs. But when it comes to the pitcher, as I look through this, there are a lot of guys you would never have ever thought might throw a perfect game.
Absolutely. It really is a once-in-a-lifetime miracle kind of a thing for pitchers as great as Randy Johnson and Roy Halladay and Sandy Koufax, and as unheard of as Charlie Robertson or Mike Witt or Dallas Braden of recent years. These are pitchers who certainly good professional pitchers, but nowhere near the level of guy you'd expect to be so great as to keep a team from ever even reaching base. And you're right, the real unpredictability about it is fun. And as you said, you can, you know, there's MVPs don't come out of nowhere. Cy Young Award winners don't come out of nowhere. Even guys who hit four home runs in a game, which is another rare feat, although the guy only has to do four things right, whereas a pitcher has to do 27 things right. Even those, most of the guys on that list are the sluggers, you know, the big hitting guys. But you look down the list of perfect game pitchers, and you've got every possible kind of hurler you could imagine on that list.
Of the 20 perfect games, is there any way to tell how many of those games that came out as perfect games, luck played some aspect of it?
Well, luck played a role in several of them. There were a couple of very interesting ones. I always like to look back to the very first. I'm a huge early baseball fan, and there were two pitched in 1880 of all times, and they were actually pitched only 5 days apart, and there wasn't another perfect game for 25 years after those two. In the second of those games, John Ward's game, there was a very rare 9-3 putout. And that one came pretty early in the game, and you don't see a lot of 9-3 putouts in Major League Baseball anymore, so there was a little bit of luck. And then more recently, although it was not only the greatest catch to end a perfect game or to near the end of a perfect game, but also had a little bit of luck in the middle of it, was Dwayne Wise's catch in Mark Burley's perfect game in 2010. In the ninth inning, first batter up, Wise is sent to the wall and above the wall to make a catch. He snags the ball, but as he's falling, drops the ball, and yet is able to catch it with his bare hand before it hits the ground. That's a little bit of luck. If he doesn't see that ball pop out, all of a sudden, perfect game over. So there's a little bit of luck here and there, but usually it's a really good, solid defensive effort by all the teams behind the pitchers, and obviously great pitching by the pitcher himself.
You know, when I take a look at the 20 pitchers that have thrown perfect games, one of them that jumps out at me that I know and that I saw pitch was David Wells. He pitched his perfect game May 17th, 1998. And when I saw his name, I had forgotten about it. I started laughing a little bit. Because if you know anything else about David Wells, he was the Babe Ruth on the mound, if you know what I'm talking about, with tattoos and all the things that he did. That game that day that he pitched the perfect game, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, sure. Wells is, again, one of those guys probably in the middle ranks of pitchers who've thrown perfect games. He certainly wasn't an out-of-nowhere Dallas Braden, Charlie Wells player, but he also wasn't the dominant Sandy Koufax, Roy Halladay type of player. He was a very good, high-quality professional pitcher, pitching for a great team, the Yankees of 98, went on to be in the World Series. So obviously had that behind him. But Wells, the best part about Wells is how much he understood, perhaps more than any other pitcher in recent years, just what an important part of baseball history the perfect game is. David Wells went to the same high school as Don Larsen, and he knew that ahead of time. And in fact, one of the people he talked to right after the game was Larsen, to point out that a couple of guys from Point Loma High in San Diego both ended up throwing perfect games for the Yankees. Talk about a statistical rarity. Wells was one of those guys who during the game, probably didn't pay as much attention to the superstitions as a lot of guys do. He's kind of a little more of a loud-talking guy, gets emotional out there. Jim Bunning was another one who would run back to the dugout in the 6th and 7th and 8th inning of his perfect game and say, "Hey, guys, we're almost doing it. Perfect game, we're doing great." And of course, no one will talk to him, and they're all freaking out that he's actually talking during a perfect game. But, no, Wells was a guy who really appreciated his perfect game. I think all the pitchers really do. But for David Wells, a guy who, as you say, didn't have the world's most fabulous reputation as a guy. He's kind of a rumbling, stumbling kind of fella. For him to put that on his resume kind of cemented him as more than just a guy with a personality, and more than just a guy who wore Babe Ruth's old hat on the mound to a game once, and more than just a guy who looked like he probably enjoyed as much beer as he did baseball. Wells put himself into a different category with that game.
Yeah, the other thing, too, I can't remember many players who were out of spring training because they had gout and others that broke their hand in a bar fight, but that certainly was Wells. Also, it's never been done except one time in the World Series, and that was by a Yankee pitcher as well, Don Larsen. You talk about a guy who was just a mediocre pitcher at best and certainly didn't have the type of stuff that would dazzle you like some of these other people like Halladay or maybe somebody like a Randy Johnson. I think the fact that he did it in a World Series where, yes, there was pressure, but there's additional pressure when you're playing in a World Series is one of those that stands out as well.
Oh, it's absolutely it's the turning point in the history of perfect games. Don Larsen comes into that game with having only three days before gotten shelled by the Dodgers. He came into the game that morning not expecting to pitch and didn't know he was going to start until he found the ball in his shoe, which was how Casey Stengel told his pitchers who was going to start that day. You'd literally go to your locker, "I got a ball in my shoe, I'm starting." He didn't know it until he got to the stadium that day. He decided after he'd gotten shelled the previous game to change his windup. He changed the way he threw pitches in the middle of the World Series, and he went for basically a constant set position with a very quick step to home plate. He was basically just playing catch. He was not doing a lot of winding up. He was not really focusing, didn't have to focus on holding runners on base because no one got on base. So he was able to do this sort of abbreviated quick step pitching right from the start. So some people have theorized that kind of threw the Dodgers off for the first few innings trying to get used to this new motion. But once he got into it, he got a little bit of help from his fielders. Gil McDougall made a great play. Mickey Mantle made a great play behind him. And, of course, the Yankees supported him with the runs he needed. And so Larsen really just kind of out of nowhere did this thing that they almost didn't even know what happened. After the game, one of his first quotes was, "Wow, yeah, I just threw a no-hitter." And they're like, "No, Don, you threw a perfect game." And he was like, "Oh, wow, okay." So it was literally that rare and that amazing that he almost didn't recognize that he had done it. And ever since then, the perfect game has immediately leaped to the top of the pitching goals for a player. Up until that point, there hadn't been one pitched for 34 years. Even then, it was rarely even called a perfect game. The phrase wasn't used until the 1920s. it wasn't a huge thing until Don Larson did it and made it a huge thing on the stage of the World Series against the Brooklyn Dodgers on TV, the first perfect game anyone's ever seen a film of. So all those things came together, and it's really, there's before Larson and there's after Larson in the history of perfect games.
Congratulations on this book. I hope everybody will check it out. It's a wonderful, insightful book about baseball and perfection. Thanks a lot, Jim.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Ron. I appreciate it. Everybody enjoy the baseball season, and who knows, there might be some perfect games coming up this year. You never know.
Okay, James Buckley, Jr., it's called Perfect, the Inside Story of Baseball's 20 Perfect Games. We continue on Sports Byline.